Hi, everyone. Josh Nason of WrestlingObserver.com here. Hope you guys are doing well. Also host of Josh Nason's Punch Out, which is maybe why you're listening to this here. So what is this? This isn't anything to do with the current universe of Josh Nason's Punch Out. This is more a, we'll call it a prequel. So what this is I, or how this started rather, is I went back into an old hard drive. I was cleaning up some stuff. These physical hard drives used to exist for those that are maybe too young to remember that stuff. So I was going through and I found this folder called WJM, and I kind of went into it and was pretty happy with what I found there, which was a complete run of shows for a show that I used to do 7 years ago this week. So that started 7 years ago this week. So let me kind of give you a little bit of the background here before I get into this. So in 2010, November 2010, I started this thing called the WGAM MMA Minute. So the station itself was called WGAM ESPN 900. It was an ESPN affiliate out of Nashua, New Hampshire, WGAM The Game. And so my friend PJ Hewitt was doing doing some work with them. He was doing some producing on some shows, doing a little bit of hosting, but not a whole lot. But he was he and I were big in the UFC at the time, and he's like, we should do something for the station. And our way in initially was to do a quick 1 minute read, which I did, and he produced, called the WGAM MMA Minute. So again, it's a weekly recap of kind of things going on. It was sponsored by Bud Light. And it was kind of just some seeding for, you know, where things could go. And what that led to, just by basically them, the station wanted to try something different, was in 2011, we launched the WGAM MMA show. Very original name, of course, you can imagine. But this was 6 years ago on May 12th, 2011. So this was a few days ago that we had launched this 6 years ago, which is hard to believe. So I went through one of the shows, and the quality's good. It's right from PJ recorded, right from the station, so everything is really high quality. Sounds good. And I was listening to this thing, and I'm like, wow, some guys may be actually interested in hearing this stuff. And I wanted it to have a home somewhere. So I wanted to revive it, and because we used to do interviews. So essentially, the show was your basic one-hour radio show. It was recorded on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. And what we did is we talked news of the week. We got a guest on, sometimes from the UFC, sometimes from Bellator, sometimes from local promotions, which is kind of cool. And the call letters, ESPN definitely helped with getting talent as well. So you're gonna hear some interesting names throughout this run. It's about, I believe, almost 1 year of shows, and then the show found its end in 2012. And as we get closer, we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then after this whole run of shows is over, I'm going to have PJ on Josh Nace's Punch Out proper, and we're going to talk about the whole situation and all that stuff. But I think you guys, if you're into retro audio and you're just something to kind of just check out, I think this, you might like this, because I was pretty entertained listening to it. Let's see. So real quick before we get into it, this week we talk about this is when Brock Lesnar had his second round of diverticulitis that just broke that day on our first show. And there was a funny note about some speculation. I think I may have said it about Lesnar being the one to break Undertaker's streak at WrestleMania. So you'll hear that in here. 6 years ago, I told you guys I was smart. Let's see, the UFC lightweight title fight between Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard, the rematch was off due to injuries from both guys, and I completely forgot that Anthony Pettis versus Gray Maynard almost was a thing that headlined that show. This is the same week that UFC added injury insurance for their fighters, and how we talked about how that was going to change things and make UFC a better place to be and better place to fight. Think of where we're at six years later with all this stuff, with the Reebok stuff and fighter pay and all this. And back then, 6 years ago, we were talking about injury insurance and how things change over time. Our interview for the week was Rick Hahn, formerly of Bellator. He'd just been a runner up to Jay Heron in that last season's tournament. He is a New Hampshire guy, obviously a excellent judoka. And we talked for about, I think it was about 15 minutes. And we just basically, you know, shot the shit about all kinds, types of different stuff, where he was at. And, you know, typical radio interview, but I thought it was kind of interesting. And Rick is a guy I definitely want to have on JNPO proper at some point in the next year. Just kind of catch up, see what's going on. He was pretty insightful. And we'll have him back on at some point. So, and we talked a little about regional. Dan Severn was coming to Worcester and so on and so forth. And we talked a little bit about a... I went to this this Portland, Maine MMA show. That was a lot of fun. So we talked about kind of the regional scene, what they need to do to survive, and so on, and wrapped it up with some tough talk. So all that being said, thank you guys for checking this out. I think you're going to enjoy it. Let me know. Tweet me, Josh Nason, JOSHNASON. Here's the schedule. So I have all the dates that these ran. So the next one, I should have ran this on the 12th. Sorry about that. So the next one you're going to get is actually in like 2 days on the 19th. And then I'm just going to run these every single week on the day that they originally aired 6 years ago. JNPO still is going to keep going on. But I just want to kind of just, you know, keep going with these and have some extra audio for you guys to listen to. If you like it, great. If not, no hard feelings. So without further ado, let's get to the debut of the WGAM MMA show for May 12th. 2011.
You're at the starting line of another hour of New Hampshire's best sports on WGAM, The Game.
UFC's biggest draw is back on the shelf for a long time. A Memorial Day main event is put on hold, and a Bellator tournament finalist joins us live tonight. It's Thursday, May 12th, and the MMA show on WGAM The Game is live. Hey, everyone. MMA journalist and voice of the MMA Minute, Josh Nason here, along with the undisputed champion of the Office Octagon, Mr. PJ Hewitt, coming to you live from the WGAM studios in downtown Nashua, New Hampshire. PJ, what's going on, man?
Good evening, Josh. Long time coming, this show.
Yes, we are launching for the first time tonight, thanks to some great efforts behind the scenes, and we're glad to every week to be coming to you with the best in mixed martial arts news, interviews, talking local, talking national. And for our first show, Paul, we have, I tell you what, I couldn't have planned this out any better.
All right, first of all, we got to get one thing straight.
Okay.
On the radio, it's PJ.
Sorry, okay.
Paul is the official, I don't even go by Paul, really.
All right.
At all. So yeah, PJ.
Well, as the undisputed champion of the Office Octagon, I think that we'll go what you want.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't test me.
A menacing figure sitting across the desk from me. All right, so... I could not plan anything better than the story we have today. Breaking news around 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
It's our breaking news bed.
Brock Lesnar, the former UFC heavyweight champion, the former WWE champion, one of the best known fighters in the world, is out. He has pulled out of UFC 131 due to a bout with
you knew you were going to screw it up, huh?
I knew it.
Diverticulitis.
Yes, his second bout.
Just like it's spelled.
His second bout with a disease. It is a swelling of the intestinal wall. Does not sound fun. Basically what happened is, so this injury kept him out of action through the fall of 2009. Through the summer of 2010. He was the UFC heavyweight champion at the time. It was a huge story. They were talking about whether or not it was going to be actually career-threatening. That was obviously the main talk, but it was also talk that was going to be life-threatening. So there was a big saga for months and months and months. He was going to come back. He wasn't going to come back. It was the only questions that UFC President Dana White got for months and months. He came back. He won. And then he seemed to be back on track. Today, out of nowhere, I mean, he's been on the Ultimate Fighter reality show, coaching, preparing for this fight in June in Vancouver at UFC 131. And today a bombshell hit that he is out indefinitely. And immediate thoughts?
It's unfortunate. I think he fought for this disease already, came back from it, looked like he was heading in the right direction, and now just a really big setback. And he's got some, as Dana White came out and said today, he's got some serious choices to make in the next couple of weeks, whether to fight this thing or to take surgery. Lesnar reported back saying, I've got to find the right solution to fix this problem. Now, two things. The right solution to fix this problem, I know what he's trying to say. He's trying the right solution to fix this problem so he can fight again, because or sooner than if he takes surgery, which is how long would he be out if he had surgery?
I believe 18 months was the estimate.
So
and that's an estimate.
Yes.
So here, so there's a few questions to me that arise out of this. One is one positive. Let's get this out of the way. He's not the champion like he was last time. So what happened last time is that they kept thinking he was going to come back, so they didn't strip him of the title. They thought he was going to come back. They didn't strip him of the title. Finally, they said, okay, we have to create an interim champion, which eventually was Shane Carwin, who beat Frank Mir for that interim title. So there's no title to worry about now. It's just, it's Brock. He's in the clear. He's out of that mix. However, this is the UFC's biggest draw on pay-per-view by far, by far. So he's out of the mix, an interesting character out of the mix. So now where does that leave the heavyweight division? And you have Junior Dos Santos. So here's the other side of this coin. So the new main event of UFC 131 is Junior Dos Santos versus Shane Carwin. The same Shane Carwin that got beat by Brock Lesnar a year ago in Lesnar's return fight from the first bout of dealing with this, ironically. So they're gonna hook it up at June in Vancouver. So that'll be interesting. Again, Shane hasn't fought in a year. Junior Dos Santos has not fought since August because he's been waiting for Cain Velasquez, and there's a sole injury issue with him. They're not sure when Velasquez is going to fight again. They're assuming it's going to be in October. So it's just, it is a mix and a mess at the top of the heavyweight division. So having Lesnar out of this right now, I think it's almost good that just go get better. But when he comes back, PJ, he's going to be a lot older. He's going to be either 34 or 35, I believe. Sorry, he's going to be 34 or 35 this summer, 18 months from now. I mean, he's going to be older. I mean, it seems like an obvious statement, but fighters don't get better as they get older, typically. Randy Couture is a very big exception to the rule.
I think one of the only exceptions to the rule, as you've seen with a lot of fighters, as recently as BJ Penn, guys who were dominant for a very long period of time that have seemed to come back to earth a little bit. Tito Ortiz, I think, is the main example, who hasn't won, I think, since the early 2000s, it seems like. Almost, he's lost like five or six fights in a row.
I think it's six now.
Which is ridiculous. And he's got a fight coming up against, what, Ryan Bader?
Yep.
Who he's going to get killed in that fight. Bader is very, very good.
Yeah, I would think so.
So it's the big trend where these guys get older and they start to do the drop off is substantial. You'll see them, they'll be really good, and all of a sudden they have a setback, and then they come back and they fight again, and they're not the same, and it's just a really quick decline. Chuck Liddell, same thing, started losing.
Yep.
So
Rich Franklin. You look at guys that all of a sudden, see, fighters, this is what happens. If you go over the course of history, you can see this. Chuck Liddell is a perfect example. Great, 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 and then he just started to slip. When you slip, it's like a running back in the NFL. That just, like that, your skills just go, and you can't keep up at that high level. And then Chuck Liddell got knocked out, what, five times in a row. It falls fast. So with Lesnar, you got to hope he comes back. It'd be fun to have him back. It's always fun when Brock's around. It is always fun. It's interesting. Huge pay-per-view draw. However, he's going to get right because you can't keep going through this. When he does come back, he's a big dude. You know what I mean? I mean, conditioning-wise, it's going to be tough, but I guess we'll have to see. So this story, we'll obviously have more on this next week in future shows, but this basically just broke down this whole week with him going to the Mayo Clinic. He knew something was wrong. He wasn't training, and when he would try to train, he felt tired. It was the same thing. Antibiotics didn't work. So just it was a question of, okay, I got to get this checked. He went to the Mayo Clinic, I believe, on Wednesday, and then they got the results, and within an hour or two, they made the announcement today at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, and Brock's definitely the type of guy that has the drive to come back with this and the determination that he won't let this beat him. Like, he wants to go out on his own terms, type of mentality. But and the fact that he hasn't really fought a lot of fights, that might help him last a little bit longer than some of these other guys. You know, these other guys we mentioned, BJ Penn, Chuck Liddell, they've been fighting for 10 plus years and have been in a ton of fights. Brock's fights are very limited, so that might extend his career if he's able to come back from this. But that, again, is a big if. You know, can he find something that's going to allow him not to have surgery and not be out an extra 18 months before, at the maybe, if he fights again?
I'm going to put you on the spot. How many more career fights does Brock Lesnar have?
Set me up. Does he have surgery or no?
Yes.
He has surgery, waits the time. How many more fights does he have?
Yeah.
I could say you could probably have like five or six.
I say three.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm guessing due to age. I'm guessing due to the severity of the injury, the chance it could come back again, depending on what happens. I say three more fights.
I would say probably five max, but three to five, I think that's a good range. But it all, again, depends on how healthy he's going to be. It depends on if he has surgery or not. So
three more,
a lot of factors,
three more fights and one main event at WrestleMania. That's what I'll say about Brock Lesnar. Speaking of injuries,
is that the one that finally gets the Undertaker? Is he the one that finally gets his first loss at WrestleMania?
Maybe it'll come out that he gave Brock this disease again. It was the Undertaker's magical powers.
After they stared each other down.
Yeah, it's a storyline waiting to happen. So injuries have not only affected the heavyweight division.
This was going to be the big story this week.
Yeah, this is our lead story. Got pushed to number two. The UFC Lightweight Championship was set to be defended on Memorial Day weekend in Las Vegas, Nevada, UFC 130. That main event is off between Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard because not just one guy got hurt, but both guys got hurt. Very interesting situation.
Coincidentally, right at the pretty much the same day or over the same couple of days.
Both guys got hurt. Frankie Edgar busted up ribs, and also really what he said what kept him out was a herniated disc in his back. So that's going to keep him out for a while. Gray Maynard had a cut suffered during training. He also had a banged up knee. Could have fought. And here's kind of where the interesting twist is. So Gray Maynard was set to challenge Frankie Edgar, their third fight, lightweight championship. So what happens is Maynard's a little bit hurt, but one of those things he can fight through. So Anthony Pettis, the former WEC lightweight champion, he of the most incredible ninja kick that you saw on ESPN all through December. He is set to fight Clay Guida the first week of June in the Tough finale show on Spike.
That is going to be a fantastic fight.
They offered both Pettis and Maynard the opportunity to headline the pay-per-view instead. Both guys accepted. UFC decided to back off of that, leave the Pettis-Guida fight as it was, and let Maynard Maynard and Edgar heal until the fall. Well, sorry, 6 to 8 weeks. So the assumption is probably September they're going to fight. There's talk that it could happen in August in Philadelphia. I doubt it. I'm guessing September you'll see that fight. Injuries abound in the sport.
And I think that's the right call, too. I don't think, maybe it might have been nice to give Maynard an extra fight, but how the fight ended with him and Frankie Edgar last time, mm-hmm. You really want to see these two guys fight again. And I think he deserves to, because then, if Maynard goes in and fights Pettis beats him. Now, takes him out of the title contention, and he's a guy who was this close to beating Frankie Edgar.
Yeah.
So I like the way I think the Clay Guida fight and Anthony Pettis is going to be
awesome.
I think it could be fight of the year.
Yeah, and it's free. And it's free, which is great. And I think more people will watch that than will buy the pay-per-view by far.
Yeah, you beat me to my point there, yes.
The pay-per-view is now headlined by Rampage Jackson versus Matt Hamill. Not a very sexy fight by any means. Rampage 5 years ago, yes. Not anymore. And I see this as they had two options to go with. They had Rampage Hamill, or they had Frank Mir versus Roy Nelson, which on the surface, you would think, well, that would actually make a good fight because they both can trash talk a bit. They are friends, which I learned the other day. And so you think, well, they can still put on, they still know how to put on the promoter's hat, so to speak, right? You and I are talking before, and I was reminded that the last time Frank Mir headlined a pay-per-view was
versus Mirko Krokop, where I believe I said they danced around for two and a half rounds, and then Mir got the knockout in a very dramatic ending to a very, very boring fight.
Yeah, UFC 119, I believe that was in Indianapolis, their first time in Indianapolis, Conseco Fieldhouse, and it was just a dreadful, dreadful, dreadful main event. And the card overall was supposed to be really good, and that was really disappointing. But that's the last time Frank Mir headlined a pay-per-view. So, PJ is like, well, what about that fight? I'm like, oh, maybe that's why. So,
yeah, because Roy Nelson had a good fight against Junior Dos Santos.
He was competitive.
And it lasted, and lasted deep into that fight, too. So,
yeah. So Jackson versus Hamill doesn't do much. It's tough because it's Memorial Day weekend anyway. So you have those fights. I mean, we'll see. I'm guessing it's probably going to do around for those that are into this type of thing, like I'm guessing 375,000 buys on pay-per-view, which is kind of where their plateau is in a lot of ways. So I don't know. I'll watch it because I love it. I won't watch it because
you'll buy it.
Well, I stay above board for the most part. I stay above board. You should too at home. You know,
no, I'm talking about going to an establishment.
Oh, I see. I see. Not that.
What are you talking about? Illegally downloading?
Yeah,
I wouldn't even know where to start to find those things.
None of that. So we have a big show tonight. We have a really big show. We have these big news stories. We are talking to a former, a runner up in Bellator's 170 pound tournament just ended last week. Rick Hahn. We'll talk to him in the next segment. And what else? I mean, going on this week, Paul, but PJ.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we get it, I have to quickly explain why you keep calling me Paul is because when you and I first met,
yeah,
both you and I started working for the Manchester Monarchs.
Yes.
Hockey team.
Ah, yes.
And when I go in for interviews and I'm professional, that would, Paul is my given name and that's what I go by to be professional. And that's what you've called me forever. But trying to wean you off that, from Paul to PJ, because that's my name. But the UFC's new accident insurance policy for fighters.
Awesome.
Would you like to explain how awesome this is for them? Because the fighters got a really good deal.
Yeah, so everyone that works a quote-unquote normal job, you have insurance. Well, fighters don't really have that insurance. They have certain coverage based on injuries in fights. UFC would... Well, we're just talking about strictly about the UFC now, no other organization. So they had certain coverage that would take care of them for fights and things like that, injuries suffered in fights. And the UFC would help out with surgeries and what have you, because they're good like that. So what they decided to do is they decided to make sure that all their fighters were covered for 100% of all injuries suffered during training, suffered during fights. Basically that they're covered now up to $50,000 per year per fighter.
Correct.
And they have 400 fighters under contract now. Because,
so 5 million max if all the fighters use their $50,000 allotment.
Right, which most won't.
Probably
but
not.
A lot will.
Yeah.
And because you guys fight hurt all the time. It's just, it's a matter of fact in pro sports. It's a matter of fact in MMA especially. Go take a course in kickboxing. Go take a course in jiu-jitsu. That 2-hour long course, picture doing that and more 5 or 6 hours a day for 5 to 6 days a week, then go run outside, go get hit by people. It's a brutal, brutal sport. But these guys are well-conditioned athletes, but they get hurt. They weren't covered. Now they're covered. Most of the guys found out about this via Twitter, coincidentally, because the UFC was doing a fighter summit this week. But the fighters are ecstatic because it covers them. It ensures that they're able to keep fighting and keep training, and if something happens, they don't have to take that money out of pocket. And I'll give you the best example I heard this week. It was Matt Mitrione, who's a UFC heavyweight, was talking about training with Pat Barry. And Pat Barry hit him so hard in the liver one day that he said, okay, don't hit me there. So Pat Barry still had to work on body shots, so he was hitting around him and ended up hurting something in his kidneys. He had to go get his kidneys checked, and he had to have something done that cost $4,000 out of pocket. In this current scenario now, which starts on June 1st, he'd be able to have that checked out, and he wouldn't have to pay out of pocket. So it keeps these guys safer. It also provides some very interesting incentives for fighters that the UFC may be trying to get, as opposed to other organizations like a Bellator, like Japan, if Japan was really hot right now with MMA, which they're not. So other organizations say, hey, come to us. You don't have to worry about the UFC. You won't get buried or whatever. You'll be able to be a star with us. The first thing I would ask as a fighter is, well, they cover 100% of insurance. What are you going to take care of? So security-wise, as a fighter, that's...
It's a huge draw to get guys to come in here.
That's a very huge draw.
Yeah, some of the other things here that this policy covers stays in effect regardless of whether a fighter has a booking or not. So he doesn't even have to have a booked fight. And if he gets hurt and while he's just continuing the training to be ready, he still gets covered. There are no provisions. This is one that really got me. There are no provisions in a Zuffa fighter's contract that prevent other activities associated with risk. To that, so that he could be up playing, pick up basketball, gets hurt, he's covered by this insurance policy. Now, Dana White said they are told to use common sense.
Yes.
I will say that, Dana White, these are fighters. They get hit in the head a lot. I know they have some people around them to help them with that, but some of these guys, you think they're just going to be out there goofing off, and I don't think it's going to happen often. You know, there might be the rare case or a couple cases, you know, a year, but hey, Rick Hahn's calling in right now, so we got to actually get to a break.
Oh,
right now.
We have to go to break. Our first ever break, everyone. You're listening to the MMA Show on Sports Radio WJAM, The Game.
Jim Lappert scores the fight 29-28, seeing the fight for Huron. Your second judge, Jason Greenwald, scores the fight 29-28, seeing the fight for Hahn. Your third and final judge, Gary Ritter, scores the fight 29-28 for the winner by split decision. And now the season 4 Bellator welterweight tournament champion, Jay
the Hurrah! We are back on the MMA Show on WGAM Sports Radio, The Game. That clip pains me, and I cannot believe, imagine how much it must pain our guest tonight, our first guest.
Controversial decision, and one both you and I disagreed with.
Very much so. We are here on the show, and on the line with us right now, fights out of Wakefield, Massachusetts, the runner-up in the Bellator Fighting Championships 170-pound tournament. Rick Hahn is on the line. Rick, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. Listening to that clip, does it kill you as much as it kills us?
Yeah, a little bit. It was a close fight, but, what can you do? When you leave it up to the hands of the judges, things like that happen.
So during the fight itself, the way that I had it scored, I had Huron winning the first, and I had you winning the final two rounds, especially that third round, which you really opened up with your striking, and you marked his face up really. He was busted up all over the place, showing that part of your game. Sitting there, you know, as you're waiting for the referee to hold your hand up, I mean, did your corner say, did they think you had won the fight?
They kind of knew I was down. I think after the first round or second round, they were telling me, I needed a knockout, pretty much. That was kind of my feeling as well. I didn't think I would win a decision against Jay, just because of his name. That was just kind of something that we kind of figured going into the fight that, he's a little more well-known fighter, that if it was a close fight, he'd probably get the call. Considering his fight before that, it was kind of the same thing. So I knew it was close, but I wasn't really sure.
So have you watched the fight again?
I did watch it a couple of days ago, and it was a close fight. And after watching it, it was I looked better than I actually felt when I was out there. I could see how a lot of people would give it to me, and I think I agree as well. Just depends on what the judges are looking for, I guess. If they're, if they count battling as a offensive move, I don't know.
So for those that are not familiar with Bellator, it's a tournament format, and you obviously competed in the 170-pound tournament. You're fighting to win. I mean, you fought, four times in, was it roughly 5 weeks, 6 weeks, give or take?
Three times in 3 months.
Wow. No, I've talked to other guys that have competed in the tournaments, and they've said that it's a lot more physically grueling than they expect going into it. I mean, talk a little bit about your experience in fighting in that short amount of time and how you're able to recover and game plan for the next fight after you won.
Well, it was my first time with that type of style. It was grueling after the first couple months. I started training in January for the first fight. So my first fight was 8 weeks after that, and then had a month layoff, but I was a little banged up after the first fight. I had to take that week off. So it really doesn't give you much preparation for your next fight, but you really get to figure that you're ready in shape. You just kind of fine tune everything for the guy you're fighting. And then going into my second fight after that, I was actually physically fine. I had 5 weeks of recovery time, which was great. It's just mentally, it just kind of takes a toll on you. You get drained. It's definitely it is hard, but I'm glad I got through the experience healthy, at least too. So it was a good experience.
So do you like the tournament style? Would you rather get to a point where you're fighting the traditional, 3 to 4 times in a calendar year, as opposed to a short amount of time like that?
Uh, like the tournament style. I mean, obviously, it's good money to be in the tournament. So you can't complain with that. And, you know, it just depends. Maybe later on down the road, you know, after I fight the next tournament, you know, if it's hopefully I'll make it to the title, have the title, the belt, and then you're only fighting a few times a year, which would be fine with me. You know, it's definitely a cool thing.
So let's talk about what's next. Bellator, again, for those that aren't familiar with it, they fight in seasonal style. The fourth season wraps up this weekend. Then they have a summer series, which is, I don't believe they have tournaments then. And then another welterweight tournament and other tournaments are going to happen in the fall. Did you talk to Bjorn Rebney, the head of Bellator, about what's next for you? Are you going to try to fight a one-off fight in the summer and then fight again in the tournament in the fall? Or do you know what's next for you at this point at all?
He told me, I don't think actually it's time for me to fight in the summer. The tournament, the welterweight tournament starts again in September. So he said I'm definitely back in the tournament. So that's 4 months away, which is, you know, a good break. So I'm happy with that. I'm fine with that.
What are you going to do with your time off?
I'm going to relax. You know, we're going to go on vacation next month. Just kind of rest up mentally. Just a little burnout, obviously. But over the summer, definitely going to work on a lot of things and train. Just to work on everything, you know, and get as good as I can get.
So you also, you know, obviously you train in Massachusetts. You also do some training in Derry, New Hampshire as well. The experience of being in New England, I believe you're from Oregon originally. How long have you been in New England? And just the experience of being in here and what's really kind of known as a sports mecca with Red Sox, Patriots, Celtics, and the Bruins as well.
Yeah, I've been out here about 6 years now, so it's, you know, it's great coming from the West Coast. It's definitely a big change. I'm used to it now, but it's cool. It's a cool place to live. Like you said, it's a sports mecca, and it's awesome. There's always something going on here, and, you know, I'm actually watching hockey and stuff now, so I'm kind of rooting for the Bruins and stuff. So, yeah, it's a great place to be.
Now, probably unbeknownst to you, Rick, you and I have a mutual acquaintance in Tyson Chartier. And for our listeners now, Tyson is a local guy from New Hampshire, just turned professional, started professional fighting last year. And I mentioned to him yesterday that I'd be talking to you. And he said, well, ask Rick, how awesome is it to train with Tyson Chartier? So he wanted me to ask you that question.
Well, you know, it's all right. Yeah, it's great. He's one of my main training partners. Definitely helped me out in the last year and a half with preparation for fighting and guys. And just to have someone that I train with, kind of doing the grind with you is always great. So he's a good guy, and I appreciate all his help and training for the last few tournament fights.
And speaking of training, your trainer is one of the most well-known trainers, I think, because of the hat and the glasses.
And the voice.
And the voice, yeah. Mark Delagrotti. Talk about, how did you first hook up with Mark Delagrotti?
Well, in 2008, when I retired from the judo competition, I had a friend whose son trained at Delagrotti's, and he kind of came with info about him. You know, he's a good striking coach, you know, he's a good striking school, and playing from my grappling background, I knew that I had to learn striking first. So I checked out the school, and, you know, I went there and liked it. And, you know, my main goal was just to get as good as I could at my striking. And he was, you know, probably the best around, and that's why I went there.
So that the experience of fighting with him, a guy that has obviously had experience training guys at the highest level, you know, UFC, Strikeforce, and so on and so forth. When you were looking, I mean, did you look at a few different schools at all, or was it just go with him and kind of go for it?
No, I didn't look at any other schools. You know, like I said, I needed to work with, you know, my whole career I've gone with the best coaches, the best schools. I don't see why anyone wouldn't do that. It just makes sense to me. So, you know, I needed to learn striking, and the best striking coach around was Martello Gratti. So it was a no-brainer for me. That's why I needed to go, and that's why I went.
So you mentioned judo. People should know you as a Olympic competitor in judo. Obviously, you know, champion at that. It obviously brought up all the time in the Bellator telecast. How has that translated, though, over to MMA? Because often you don't hear about that a lot of guys with that skill set. You're one of the few that does. How has that helped you translate MMA, if at all?
I definitely helped a lot. Early on in my MMA career, I did mostly just judo stuff. You know, worked to get in the clinch just because my striking was just very limited. But just for mental preparation, you know, all the training and experiences that I've had with judo is carried over to my MMA career, and so I kind of I take it the same way. You know, I mentally and physically I prepare for a fight just like I did when I was training for judo in the Olympics. So it's whatever the professionalism, I guess, is carried over from my judo career.
So this stage of your career, 11-1, you know, 34 years old. Been to the finals of the 170-pound tournament. Where do you feel that you're at right now in your career, and what do you think that you have to improve on the most?
I think I'm still young in my career. You know, I've only been fighting 2.5 years. So I have a lot to learn. My body feels good. I still feel young at it. You know, I'm fine. I have a lot of energy. I'm ready to learn as much as I can. I'm just going to go back and work on everything. You know, my striking's not where I want it to be yet. My grappling's not where I want it to be. I'm just going to work on everything, you know, the transition from, you know, the ground to get the guy down to everything. So I'm going to be traveling this summer, you know, training a lot down at the Hensel Gracie Academy in New York, and just work on everything.
And before I let you go, I do have to ask, you know, the kids are into the Twitter these days and the Facebook and things like that. Anything to plug in terms of how fans can connect with you, sponsors, anything like that?
Well, I do have a website, riphon.com, and like I just think my sponsors, Game 7, Sports Training, Affliction, Tokyo 5, Fuji, Ubermax, Death Wish, Tokyo Nutrition. I'm pretty sure that's everyone. If I forgot anyone, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure that's it.
Well, you have a lot of sponsors. You're a popular guy.
I'm getting there, yeah.
Well, if you get any more finals and eventually win one of these finals, you're going to be even more popular. Rick Hahn, Bellator Fighting Championships, 170-pound fighter. Look for him this fall. Go to his website, do some research. And, Rick, we appreciate you being on the first show, and best of success in the future.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Rick Hahn, ladies and gentlemen. Good stuff. Good stuff. Bellator, 170-pound competitor, one of the guys I think to watch a lot for in that fall season. And if you have not watched Bellator, it's on Saturday nights on MTV2. Watch it. It's good. It's a nice alternative to UFC. They do the tournament style, and it's fun. Some people may think you're watching from week to week to week. It's tough, but it's really good. It's fun. So I know that you watched a little bit of Bellator too, PJ.
Yeah, not so much recently because I've got some other things going on, but it's a little different than UFC. They don't use the octagon. They use a circle ring.
More of a circular cage.
Yep, cage. It looks a little bigger, so the fighters have a little bit more room in, but it's just as exciting, and you get some really, really good fights. And Rick's fight, you know, was very good, and it fights in an extremely fast and aggressive pace.
He does. And I tell you what, go find the fight on YouTube. Go watch it. It's 3 rounds, so it's 15 minutes. Spoiler alert, because it was its decision. But go watch it, and you know what? Turn the sound off, or just go watch it and just see what you think. And I will tell you, I dare you to tell me that Jay Heron's a great fighter. He's a great story. I love the fact that he's been able to come back, because he gets screwed over by Strikeforce very badly last year. And it just tell me that Rick Hahn didn't win that fight. That's all I'm asking. Just
can't do it.
Can't do it. You don't want to sound like a local Hahn, because we had the guy on our first show.
For research purposes, I was watching the fight about an hour or so before we got on the air, and yeah, he definitely won that. It was a very close fight, but it seemed to me that he had the edge in that fight. But like you said, what can you do? His corner was telling him, you got to knock the guy out, and that's why you don't let it go to the judges.
And that tournament style is very unique. It's one why I wanted to ask him about that, because again, I've talked to other guys that. That's a grind, right? And it's just you're fighting basically, you know, depending on how hurt you are, you know, every, you know, 3 to 4 weeks or so, not even.
And in his case, 3 fights in 3 months.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, you think about most of these top guys are, you know, for example, the UFC are fighting 3 times in a year, sometimes 4. In case of, you know, GSP, usually he'll fight twice a year. I mean, this guy's fighting 3 times in 3 months. That's a lot. That's a physical toll. Again, we're talking about in the first segment. We're talking about insurance, taking care of guys getting hurt. That's a big thing. And you can tell, imagine how great insurance would be if you're fighting that often.
I think he'd be one of those guys using that $50,000 allotment a little bit more than some of these other guys.
So Bellator actually airs this Saturday night on MTV2. There is Hector Lombard is main eventing on that fight, who is probably one of the most fun fighters to watch outside the UFC, in that he is a wrecking machine at 185 pounds. He is built like, you know what? He is jacked, and he hits hard.
And
it's hard.
And unfortunately, I think most people in here, or in this area, if they're going to be watching this fight, it's going to be on DVR because...
Ah, that's right. That
Bruins Lightning Game 1 Eastern Conference Finals is this week. So I think I might be one of those people that's watching that fight on DVR.
So Bellator, 9 o'clock this Saturday night, 9 to 11. DVR it. Do the overrun, 15 minutes, just in case, because fights often go long. And definitely, I'd watch that and check it out. And definitely, Rick Hahn this fall. So we're gonna head to our final break of the night. We are gonna come back. We're gonna talk some local MMA, even more local MMA, and also talk a little Ultimate Fighter. So you're listening to the MMA Show on Sports Radio WJM, The Game. Final segment, the inaugural edition of the WJM MMA Show. TJ Hewitt, Josh Nason with you Thursday night. We've had a packed show. If you're just joining us, you've missed a lot. Bunch of jerks, where were you? Not you. Sitting right there listening.
Me specifically, or you're talking to listeners now?
I'm talking to one-on-one listeners.
All right.
Had an awesome show so far. First segment, talked about Brock Lesnar. If you missed the news, he is out indefinitely with another episode of... Say it.
Diverticulitis.
Yes.
I didn't even have to look at my notes.
Because I can't pronounce it. I'm not a doctor. That's why I'm doing this.
Just like it's spelled out. Diverticulitis.
Yes. If I ever had to spell that, I would lose a spelling competition, assuming I was in one. So we're back again. Brock Lesnar out. Gray Maynard, Frankie Edgar off. So it's an injury-filled episode. We talked to Bellator. Should be Bellator 170-pound tournament winner, Rick Hahn, in the second segment. And now we're going to talk about the lifeblood of MMA, PJ. We're going to talk about not the UFC, not Strikeforce, not even Bellator, but the local scene. And the local scene is alive and well here in New England. It's alive and well here in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, wherever you're listening to this. So a lot of good things going on right now. And last weekend, I had the opportunity to take the drive up 95 to Portland, Maine, my home area, my hometown almost, to check out a promotion that a lot of fans will be familiar with, Global Fight League. They did a co-promotion with Bellum Combat Association, which is a brand new organization in Maine. They had a show at the Portland Expo. I would say approximately 2,300 people there, give or take.
Oh, fantastic.
Loud, boisterous, into it all night long. The show went 4.5 hours, a little long. It had 13 fights, I believe, 13 or 14 fights. Majority amateur fights. So, yeah.
We've been to Combat Zone, so we're used to that.
Exactly.
Same type of thing.
I will tell you, though, if you've never been to one of these regional shows, don't let the fact that amateurs are fighting dissuade you from going. It is great action. It's just a little difference in terms of the leg pads and no elbows, I believe. I don't
Correct.
Have a full set of rules, what have you.
But those are the two big ones, yeah.
Those are two big ones.
Padded up shins and no elbows.
But we saw a great fight at the Combat Zone show here in Salem, New Hampshire, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. That was amazing. You put that show in any cage, any show, people would go nuts for it. So keep that in mind. Anyway, so GFL Bellum co-promotion, headlined by Bantamweight champion Pedro Gonzalez, defeating local favorite Paul Gorman from the Academy, which is the big school in Maine, big school in Portland. Sold a ton of tickets, and it showed. They had several guys that fought in the card. They went nuts for him all night. Gonzalez is really good. He beat Gorman by unanimous decision. I had him winning 4-1. The judges saw it 3-2. I was actually talking with someone from the GFL about this last week. And he saw it the way I saw it, 4-1. He was surprised, but, you know, judges, again, as Rick Hahn said, you just don't know. Quiet weekend ahead in terms of the local promotions. Nothing going on this weekend. The weekend after that, there are 4 events, and we'll talk about those more in depth next week, including a former UFC champion, a UFC legend, headlining a show in Worcester, Massachusetts at the DCU Center. Dan Severn.
The Beast.
The Beast comes east.
I didn't know he was still fighting.
He is still fighting. He's been fighting on these regional style shows for what his goal is to get.
He's the MMA equivalent, I think he's going to be, of the wrestler. Yeah. Just fighting in a, he's going to fight in a high school gym soon.
Still has the mustache too, by the
way. Of course he does.
Trains out of
that's how you recognize him.
Trains out of Michigan. He is going for 100 wins. I think he's at 98 now.
That's insane.
Or he's at 99, but I know he's right in the ballpark going for the century mark. And there was some talk about he wanted to fight Royce Gracie on the UFC card in Brazil coming up in August, just for old time's sake, and that didn't happen. It does look like Royce Gracie is going to get.
I think that's
that
a
card
smart
anyway.
Move by Dana White and Zuffa.
So we'll talk more about that next week, and also something again. There's four shows next weekend, so if you live anywhere in New England, you're going to have MMA all the time. What I also heard, what's good about Maine, is that more shows are coming up, which is always good. More chances for local guys to fight. And the thing I liked about the main card, the GFL Bellum co-promotion, and I did a story on BloodyElbow.com about this, shameless self-promotion. Go to BloodyElbow.com, search Josh Nason. You'll see my write-up from the night and also a feature I did on Jason Lehman, who's the primary owner, how the promotion came to be, why he's co-promoting. It really makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways. And one of the things I liked about it was like, we want our guys to fight here in Maine. We want them to get to the UFC. We want them to get to Strike. We want them to get to the big promotions, but we don't want to have to send them to Las Vegas to train. We don't want to have to send them to Florida or anywhere else. Let's get that experience here. Give them cards and cards to fight on, get the experience, and then have the UFC come to us and say, we want these guys. And I think that's, it may be idealistic for me to think, you know, of course, a promoter telling me that, and a promoter obviously wants to make money. But it's also great that to even hear that and even that mindset. And
but that's a goal that they have.
And that's a goal. And also with Marcus Davis's co-promotion with CageFX, an organization based in Massachusetts, also puts on great shows. The co-promotion stuff makes sense for a lot of reasons. And we'll talk to some of those people in the months ahead, educate you a little bit on them, and go out and see these events. On that same note, before we get to talking a little bit about the Ultimate Fighter, World Championship Fighting, a very well-known New England organization, is coming back. Been off for a little while, and they're coming back on June 18th, the Shriners Auditorium in Wilmington, Massachusetts. 15 fights on the card. It's their 11th event in history. And according to the poster, I don't know if they've officially released this yet, but I looked at the poster before we started the show. Headlined by Dan Lozon versus Noah Wiseman for the WCF lightweight title. Lozon, obviously very familiar to local fight fans and obviously to even hardcores. Fought in the UFC a few times, the brother of Joe Lozon. And the guy's 14-4, 1-2 in a row, has had some issues outside the cage, seems to have things back on track. Noah Wiseman, 5-1, won 3 in a row. This is going to be a really good fight. So WCF coming up in June, next month. It's hard to believe June is next month already.
Oh, I know.
But we'll be talking more about that in the upcoming weeks. And do you actually have the WCF page?
I don't. No, that's actually the Ultimate Fighter page. But Dan Lozon, a guy, saw a fight for Triumph Fighter last year, fought a guy named John Ortolani. John Ortolani, who was the huge crowd favorite, the local guy.
Yes.
That did not go Ortolani's way, though. I believe it was a knockout in the second round. By Dan Lozon, who, and Ortolani, I think, won that first round too. Was more aggressive and then took him down or knocked him down, jumped on top, and then managed to finish out the first round and then got knocked. Ortolani got knocked out in the second round and quickly put the crowd, quieted the crowd down. So he's a very exciting fighter and able to come back if he gets a little setback in the fight. So
speaking of exciting, we have 4 minutes left. And we want to thank you for joining us here tonight, WGAM MMA show. In our remaining 4 minutes, let's talk about the Ultimate Fighter, which also has a local flavor. Listen to that bed music.
Yeah.
This is a professional
production.
It's the
Tough Report. That's what I'd like to call it.
This isn't recorded like in some, you know, crumb bum studio, everyone. This is like real stuff.
Yeah, so quickly getting back to the fight last night, I'll stick mostly to the fight and not the house antics that happens in the build-up on the show, but it was Team Brock Lesnar's Chuck O'Neill, local guy, who I think we might be talking to in a few weeks, too, and versus Team Dos Santos's Javier Torres. Now, Torres is a guy who was 2-0 coming into the competition. Chuck O'Neill was 8-3. This was the wild card fight, so they had lost their previous fights each. Chuck O'Neill got caught in a triangle, was very upset because he thinks that is his move, and for him to get caught in his own move, he was very upset.
You don't get caught in your own finisher.
No, and Javier Torres was very unimpressive in his first fight in the Ultimate Fighter. Held on a lot, just held the guy up against the cage, and it wasn't very exciting. Dana White said as much last night. And Dos Santos went to bat for him, said, "This is the guy, best in training, the best guy we have right now for the wild card spot. We got to go." All right, Dana says, "All right, I trust Junior Dos Santos." But Javier Torres did the same thing. Held Chuck O'Neill up against the cage, didn't do anything really. Managed to get a takedown late, I believe, in the second round. And then it was O'Neill quickly stood up and then took him back down.
Yes.
And that took him down late in the first round. But it wasn't a very exciting fight. Chuck O'Neill gets the victory. That ties it up now. Each coach has four fighters going into the quarterfinals now.
Yep.
And not an overall great fight. Good for Chuck O'Neill. And it actually sets up right now. They did make the announcement of the quarterfinal matchups here.
Indeed.
Team Lesnar's Clay Harvison will be taking on Ramsey Najim. I have such a hard time
pronouncing. Just call him Ramsey.
Ramsey. Chris Cope from Team Lesnar versus Shamir Bailey. Chuck O'Neill from Team Lesnar versus Dos Santos' Zach Davis. And then Lesnar's Tony Ferguson versus Team Dos Santos' Ryan McGilvery.
Good stuff.
That's coming up next week. Two fights next week on The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, there's three episodes left. So there's two fights next week, two fights a week after, and then the semifinals to get into the house. This season overall has been kind of blah because Brock hasn't really gone crazy like a lot of people think he would. Now it'll be interesting because the dynamic completely changed. Obviously, the show was filmed before the injury or the ailment, whatever you want to call it, came out.
Diverticulitis.
So, yes, which I'm not going to try to pronounce ever again. But, you know, it's one of those things that happened. There hasn't been a lot of heat between Dos Santos and Lesnar this year, like there has been with Rampage Rashad, Penn Pulver. The list goes on and on. Shamrock Ortiz Liddell. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So, average season, but
there was more tension between Dos Santos and one of his coaches than I think there was between him and Lesnar.
Yeah, but root for the local guy, Chuck O'Neill.
Yeah,
Chuck O'Neill. He fights in 2 weeks, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the fights are next week.
He fights in 2 weeks. 2 weeks. But
he just fought last night, so I'd assume, he fights in 2 weeks.
So, PJ, we're coming near the end here, buddy.
Yeah, we didn't get to another story, but we can talk about it next week because the fight's not coming up this week. But definitely want to get to this story. We're big hockey guys. Obviously, the Bruins have Tampa Bay in the first game of the Eastern Conference Finals this Saturday. A former guy who has a ties, as in he got hit in the head by Marty McSorley with a stick way back, Donald Brashear will be fighting in his first ever MMA event. Former enforcer for Philadelphia, for Edmonton. Like, he played for a bunch of guys, or a bunch of teams. He'll be fighting in a couple, coming up soon. So I want to get to... I got some thoughts on that.
Very good. So we'll talk about that next week. We want to thank Rick Hahn for joining us. I want to thank PJ for being here. For as far as myself, you can read my work on BloodyElbow.com, WrestlingObserver.com, this month's edition of Fight Magazine, a feature on Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker Lamar Woodley and his MMA training, and also do some weekly podcasts and things here. Follow me on Twitter at Josh Nason. Go ahead.
Yep, and you can find the show on WGAMRadio.com, searching shows for WGAM MMA show. Follow us on Twitter, WGAM_MMA, and check out the blog, WGAMMMA.blogspot.com.
So this has been a fun first episode, and we'll see you next week. And again, until next week, keep that chin down and those hands up.